This is your last chance to enter the Ohio Lottery's Fun Turns 50 promotion. Score $3,500 and two tickets to the epic party at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, where you could win part of another $400,000 in cash prizes. Enter the new 50th anniversary scratch-off or $50 worth of eligible non-winning $5 or $10 scratch-offs and My Lotto rewards through the Ohio Lottery app. Hurry up! The last entry deadline is May 13th. Lottery players are subject to Ohio laws and commission regulations. Play responsibly.
Yo, what's up? Welcome to Kind of Funny Games Daily for Wednesday, March 24th, 2021. I'm your host, Blessing Adioye Jr. Joining me is Game Onassis, a.k.a. Janet Garcia.
What's good? Glad to be here.
Janet, it's nice to have you back. Right before the show, we were just talking about the difference between a sandwich and a hot dog and a burger. Do you want to catch us up? Where do you stand?
Yeah, the conversation is dumb. I regret bringing it up. That's stance one. Stance two, it is by denotation, like the definition, but we live in a world where connotation takes precedence. So like, sure, is it technically? Yes. But would you go into a sandwich shop and order a hot dog? No, you can't do that.
It's connotation changes over time, though. I mean, like, we could be the change you want to see in the world. Let's go into these sandwich shops. Let's order hot dogs. Let's do it.
No,
we can do it together.
You can't like, just do that. You can't just go into a Subway and order a hot dog.
It only creates more chaos
just
in the
just
world,
just so you guys know.
Like, why would you?
With the power of the internet, we can do just about anything. You don't think that if we try hard enough, we can't make it so Subway sells a hot dog? I feel like we could.
Yes, but it wouldn't be right.
It'd be such a bad hot dog, too, because they're out of their element. They don't know what they're doing. They have no authority in this space.
That's like when McDonald's tries to make a rib, and it's like, you guys shouldn't be doing this. Just stick to what you know.
McRib slander. McRib slander on a Tuesday morning.
Come on. Don't do this. Don't lose the best. Dude,
are you guys going to sit here and tell me that the McRib is great?
No, it's nasty.
Come on. Okay. Hey. Everyone calm the fuck down. We're all getting worked up.
Someone that was raised on Encore dinners, I know what nasty meat is, and that's some nasty meat.
I love it, though. It's so
Gianna Garcia, what's going on in the world of Game Onassis? What have you been up to?
Yeah, I've been doing a bunch of streams, still doing the Patreon that's going strong, patreon.com/GameOnassis, check it out. Been doing reviews. I reviewed Maquette. I reviewed this indie game called, I think it's called What Comes After. So yeah, been doing a little bit of everything and my weekly podcast too. So ready to talk about news because like I'm constantly in that news headspace.
Awesome. What did you think about Maquette? Did you like it?
Yeah, I liked it. I liked it a lot. I think it's interesting because it's definitely like not the best puzzle game and not the best story, but I think that some of its parts works together really well in a way that's kind of rare. So I really recommend it. I think it's pretty strong. It's probably in like the upper area of like my best of 2021. Granted, that's because not a lot of really amazing stuff has come out yet. Currently, my game of the year is Bravely Default 2, which I'm only like 4 hours in, which is literally like not even like the game barely started. But I've really enjoyed that. But I'm sure something will overtake it. I'm just waiting to see what that is.
Janet, let me talk to you about a big game of the year contender, because today's stories include It Takes Two being a hit, DICE Award nominees, and more, because this is Kind of Funny Games Daily, each and every weekday at 10 a.m. live right here on twitch.tv/kindoffunnygames. We run you through the nerdy news you need to know about. If you're watching live, you can correct us when we get stuff wrong by going to kindoffunny.com/you'rewrong. If you don't want to watch live, you can watch later on youtube.com/kindoffunnygames, roosterteeth.com, or you can listen later on podcast services around the globe by searching for Kinda Funny Games Daily. To be a part of the show, at the patreon.com/kindoffunnygames, where bronze members or above get to write in, and silver members or above get the show ad-free with the exclusive daily post show. Housekeeping for you, our It Takes Two review is up right now as a Kinda Funny Games cast. Me, Greg, and Tim have all played the game to varying degrees. I beat the game, Greg's played quite a few hours, Tim has played the first couple of hours. If you want our breakdown of our full thoughts, you can catch that over on the Gamescast podcast feed or on the youtube.com/kindoffunnygames. Thank you to our Patreon producers, Mick at the Nanobiologist, Abrahamson, Blackjack, and Trent Berry. Today we're brought to you by DoorDash, Gabby, and Game Attack, but I'll tell you about that later. For now, let's begin with what is, and forever will be, the Roper Report. It's time for some news. We have five stories today.
A Baker's Dozen!
starting with our number one, the 24th annual DICE Awards were just announced. I'm going to pull directly from their website where they break it down like this. The Academy of Interactive Arts and Sciences is pleased to announce the nominees for its 24th annual DICE Awards. The winners will be revealed at the DICE Awards ceremony happening virtually on April 22nd, 2021, featuring an all-new format. The show will be hosted by Greg Miller, never heard of him, Jessica Chobot, and our homie Khalif Adams, and live streamed via our media partner IGN Entertainment. A total of 57 games in 2020 received a nomination. The Last of Us Part II leads with 11 nominations, followed by Ghost of Tsushima with 10 nods, and Hades with 8. Tying for 5 nominations each are Half-Life Alyx, Marvel Spider-Man Miles Morales, and Ori and the Will of the Wisps. Finalists for 2020's top honor, Game of the Year, are Animal Crossing New Horizons, Final Fantasy VII Remake, Ghost of Tsushima, Hades, and The Last of Us Part II. Now, I want to have a little bit of fun on this episode. I want to go through some of the different categories and what the nominees are. But I'm going to start with the Game of the Year category, right? Like I just said, we got New Horizons, Final Fantasy, Ghost of Tsushima, Hades, and Last of Us Part II. Chan, does that sound about right to you?
Yeah, I think that is a pretty accurate reading of like the pulse of what that year was. Yeah, not a lot of qualms there.
Do you have any predictions?
Oh, I feel like... I don't know. DICE is sort of a wild card because it doesn't, I feel like the results are never what I feel like they will be. Like I have an easier time judging the Game Awards, which I feel like has more traditional outcomes. I think in part that's probably due to how they, you know, the pool of voters or judges, like usually they're like, you know, media, I mean, it's all media people, but you kind of get a sense, I think, just from being on Twitter and being in the know of like what other critics are thinking, like, okay, based on this, if we logic this out, we can kind of figure out what Game of the Year would be for that. Oh man. Game of the Year was kind of weird last year too. A lot of people did lean on Hades. I feel like Hades will win that. Like that'd be my guess.
Yeah, I'm looking through. I'm trying to find previous years for DICE to see what we can compare it to, because I feel like every award show does kind of have its own energy and its own bag, and so you can kind of predict based on like the Game Awards. I feel like is kind of easier because you can kind of tell the pulse of where the media is at, what the Game Awards usually leans towards. There are certain award shows where things get a little bit unpredictable, like the GDC Awards comes to mind, where I believe in previous years, we've gotten games like Entitled Goose Game winning Game of the Year. And stuff.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. Cause I was like trying to remember who that was. I'm like, whoever that was like really left field. Actually, now that I think about it, I think Final Fantasy VII could win too. My answer would be Last of Us 2, the correct answer. That game's like not only Game of the Year, but one of the best games I've played in my life. You know, I think it's the only game on this list that will be talked about for longer than a few years. Like, I think we'll be pointing back to that for such a long time because of what a tremendous impact it had and how amazing it was on a narrative level as an example of good sequel. Like I think it's going to hit on so many levels versus like Hades is a great game. Final Fantasy VII Remake is great, but I don't think we're really going to be having that deep of a conversation on it for years to come. I do, you know, shout out to Hades for what it does in its genre. I think it is like more of a standout within its field, but I feel like Last of Us Part II stands out as a game. And as a movie, if you want to be kind of head ass with it, but I don't really like taking that angle because that's like not a fan. The whole like, oh, it transcends games. I'm like, no, it's just a really good game. Like, it's just a really good game. And so, yeah, I think the Zag, I would guess Final Fantasy VII or Hades. The safe answer to me, like the very kind of like, oh, sure, is Last of Us 2. I sense that they're going to zag, though.
Yeah, I mean, I think the safe answer would probably be between Hades and The Last of Us Part II. You know, I think you saw both of those games take home quite a few Game of the Year awards last year. Hades was IGN. And yeah, like I think last year for video games, when you look at the Game of the Year nominees, it's just such a strong year because honestly, any of these can take it home and I'd be like, cool. Yeah, no, that sounds about right. Like Final Fantasy VII Remake took home kind of funny's Game of the Year, right? And like that's one that I feel like kind of snuck through and kind of took it out of nowhere. But it's one that you look at it and you're like, yeah, no, there's such fervor and people love this game. Animal Crossing New Horizons, if you want to talk about just straight up like a great game, but also a great game that had big impact for what last year was. Animal Crossing New Horizons, I could easily see the conversation around. Ghost of Tsushima is a game that hits big with fans. It won the fan-voted Game of the Year for the Game Awards last year. And that would be one that I would be happy to see take home an actual game of the year, like paneled game of the year, because I think that'll be big for that game, because I think that game deserves all the love that it gets. No matter what way this goes, I think, you know, any of these games deserve it. But to go through some of the other categories, we got Outstanding Achievement in Game Direction. The nominees are Ghost of Tsushima, Hades, Half-Life Alyx, Kentucky Route Zero TV Edition, and The Last of Us Part Two. Do you have any predictions there?
Oh, man, I hated Kentucky Route Zero TV Edition so much. Oh, let's see, predictions for Game Direction specifically. It's tough. I have to put on my, like, dev hat, which I don't actually have a dev hat. So it's an invisible hat, which makes this challenging. I would think maybe Half-Life Alyx. I feel like because it had to, like, navigate such a underutilized space, you know, with no shade to the many developers who are working in VR, it doesn't really get talked about a lot. And even when it does, so often conversations around VR games are, it's really cool, like, as an experience. You know, it's kind of, they have, like, this different style and cadence to them. I think us as critics, and even just as, you know, those listening who are just fans, like, we're still figuring out what we even want from that space, and that space is figuring out how to give us what we don't know that we want. So it's a lot of guesswork, I think. And I didn't play a lot of Half-Life Alyx, but I think it is, you know, people talk about it as a standout in that VR space, and I think for that alone I could see it winning, because it kind of had to succeed in very not uncharted territory, but, like, not fully explored territory.
Yeah, Half-Life Alyx is one of those games that I you hear about a lot. People who played it very much evangelize it and talk about how amazing it is. But it's also one of those games that you don't hear about in the broader conversation, because most people don't have VR in order to play this game, right? And so this is the game that, when you're talking about game of the year, has the least reach and the least people being like, this is the one, right? Like, the least amount of votes, the least amount of people that are vying for it. And so when you're talking about game direction, yeah, I can see Half-Life Alyx definitely being a contender, because I think that's an easier argument to make in terms of a game design perspective. From a direction perspective, the way that this game, the things that this game does for VR, I could see people making that argument. My prediction would probably still be between Hades and The Last of Us Part Two, because I think if you're talking about game direction, there, the ways in which the moves that Hades makes as an independent game, but then also a game that went through early access, that navigated that space extremely well, took all the feedback that they got during that period and was able to deliver on a final product that sat well with people and got people very excited about it. I think there's a story there that would speak to, hey, this is how you direct a game. This is how you make this thing work. And then last is part two. I think when you're talking about them seeing their vision through and making something that feels big and unique for Naughty Dog and took risks in place that you might not have expected from Naughty Dog, I think you make that argument there. And so I my prediction is between one of those two.
Yeah,
we also
sure.
got, let's see, Outstanding Achievement in Game Design, which the nominees are Ghosts, Hades, Half-Life Alyx, The Last of Us Part II, Marvel, Spider-Man, Miles Morales.
In game design. What are they again? Can you read off that list one more time? I'm like scrolling through, but I'm seeing where
Ghost
it's at.
Ghost of Tsushima, Hades, Half-Life Alyx, The Last of Us Part II, and Marvel's Spider-Man, Miles Morales. This is interesting, because we're talking about the DICE Awards. And so talking about this right after talking about game direction, I can see a lot of overlapping argument between the two categories in terms of how you judge them.
Yeah, I'm... Do you have any idea how those are parsed out? Like, what's the line? Like, where does direction end and design begin? I guess we're thinking more in terms of, like, maybe overarching, like, how it over, like, the overarching communication it has to the player versus, like, the nitty gritty of, like, when you're in the moment, I would guess would be the distinguishing line there.
Mm-hmm. I mean, game direction, and I think this is obviously going to change from person to person as the panel sit on it. Game direction, I see as what is your vision and how did you fulfill that vision, right? How did you see that through? Whereas game design, I could see as a, hey, what are the mechanics present in this game? How do the systems interact with the mechanics? How does all this play together? What is the gameplay loop? How do all the different elements of this game play together in a way that creates an amazing final experience?
I think Hades maybe for that one. Again, like, I also just lean heavy on Last of Us 2 for everything, because I think their game's, like, freaking brilliant. But I think if we're, like, breaking down, like, what, where each one shines, I think Hades' design is really well done in the sense that it has very layered systems that it doesn't like super directly communicate to its players. Obviously, there's plenty of text to like help you read like what the items and the power-ups are, but it kind of just lets you explore and figure it out without leaving you lost, which is a really hard thing to do. And I think it's the only game on this list. Again, I didn't spend a lot of time with Half-Life Alyx because I found it kind of scary. it's too real. It's too immersive. I got freaked out being in VR with that one, so I'll have to go back to it. But I think it's the only one on this list that really does that. You know, an argument for Last of Us 2 as well. But like Ghost, everyone applauds the wind. I feel like people might stand the win during this award show because like everyone talked about that being so clever and like such a good way to gesture for the player on where to go. But other than that, I feel like it is kind of like very much video game, the video game. Like it feels like a polished version of a lot of ideas I've seen before. Miles, similarly, like it kind of plays it safe in a lot of ways. Like it's easy to track down the collectibles. It's a little like I think both Ghost and Miles, despite being like really good games, like of varying degrees, they're a little bit vanilla. So I think it's really between those middle three, if we're looking at like the actual list, Hades, Half-Life, and Last of Us 2, because I think they're the only ones that I guess toe that line between letting the player discover something and also providing the tool set needed to be able to utilize those discoveries that they make.
I'm gonna pull one or two more categories to talk about. Let's go with Online Game of the Year. The nominees for this one are Animal Crossing New Horizons, Call of Duty Black Ops Cold War, Fall Guys Ultimate Knockout, Ghost of Tsushima, and Tetris Effect Connected. This is an interesting one for me because I love that Ghost of Tsushima is nominated for Online Game of the Year obviously a nod to Legends.
Okay.
Which I think is really cool because Ghost of Tsushima Legends doesn't get enough love. You know, that's a mode that they added months after, and so a lot of people missed out on it. But for the folks that dove into it and stuck with it, I think all those folks agree that like, hey, no, this is an amazing mode. I was enthralled with it when I played through it and played through the raid and was very impressed.
I remember
by
you
how
saying
good
that
the raid
it like
was.
It like changed like how you felt about the base game even, which I was really surprised to hear you have that feedback for it. But I'm like, well, game's already over, so I'm not coming back. But yeah, that is interesting that's in there. That's such a... did you feel like it was specifically strong as like a multiplayer, like a co-op online experience, that it kind of served itself well in that sense?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I think I would not be surprised to see them do more work with Legends in a future iteration of Ghost of Tsushima. Like, I think when Ghost of Tsushima 2 comes out, they'll either pack it in with another Legends mode or even make a different Ghost of Tsushima game that is straight up online co-op, because I think that mode of itself with the loot system, with the raid, with how they tackle these different story missions and have that work as a full experience, you know, even though it's packaged as just a mode, it feels like a full experience. Yeah, no, I think I honestly think that there's a strong future for Legends, and yeah, as an online multiplayer co-op game, it is fantastic. Especially when you want to talk about the raid and how they create moments for you to work together with your partner. Out of
this
these nominees,
be Fall Guys, though, right?
Yeah, I mean, I'm surprised that Warzone isn't here. I feel like Warzone would be a strong nominee here, but out of the ones listed, Fall Guys is the one I'd go to, because Animal Crossing New Horizons, like, yeah, it has online, but do people talk about the online being amazing?
It's painful. There's so many, like, I love that game. I've been playing that game for a year straight. It was one of the few games where I rolled credits and I'm still around. Like, I'm playing that today. I'm streaming it today. Like, I stream it all the time. Like, I love Animal Crossing New Horizons. And anyone that loves that game or has played any of that game knows that there's a lot of flaws. It does not take long to list the flaws in this game, and online is definitely one of them. It's slow, it's complicated. I remember, you know, I had covered this game back when I was at IGN doing guides, and I had written the like how to do online multiplayer page. That thing was a novel, and it like, you know, got a lot of traffic because no one knew how to do it. And I who wrote the page still don't remember some of the information. I'm like, if I want to mail you something, you need to fly to my island. We need to be friends, and you need to fly to my island. Like, honestly, I didn't even know I had these feelings within me. Seeing this here makes me a little mad, because it's like, it's not that it's like so, so terrible, but it like doesn't do it well, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, I think it's cool that it has it, and it definitely enhances the game. Like, I love being able to visit people. I think the dream code stuff they added is cool. Like the kiosk and game designs, like there are ways This could have been online game of the year if they did it differently, but they didn't.
If the so online instead, was it's good.
Just frustrating. Yeah, if only the online was good.
Ladies and gentlemen, you can of course go to the DICE website over on interactive.org and check out all the rest of the nominees. They got plenty of categories. I'm looking at the outstanding achievement in. Or oh, I lost it. There's like a best. There's a here we go. Family Game of the Year, which
is
a stacked lineup here, right? It's Animal Crossing New Horizons, Astro's Playroom, Dreams, Fall Guys Ultimate Knockout, and Sackboy: A Big Adventure, which definitely for me Sackboy. Is a stacked category. You're going Sackboy. Were you a big fan of Sackboy when that came out? Because I thought I was the only one.
I wouldn't say I'm a big fan. It's fine. I haven't beaten it because I'm trying to play. Yeah, I'm trying to play with my whole apartment, minus my dad, because he doesn't play games. So it's like me, my boyfriend, my brother, and my brother's fiance. Trying to get four adults with different schedules to also be in the mood to play one specific game. It's been a slow roll, but I feel like it's the only game that feels like you can really easily play it with like a big family, kind of like the way I'm doing it, especially if you have different like ability levels. Like when I think family game, I think a spread of gamers and maybe even people that aren't really like they wouldn't consider themselves gamers, but they, you know, are down to play some Mario Kart or, you know, they did Wii Sports, like they'll jump in. I feel like it's the easiest one to jump into versus Fall Guys. That game's really competitive. Like it's a competitive game. I am not good at it. And I play games literally all the time. Dreams, it's a fun experiment and I enjoy like search and stuff, but I wouldn't say like, I wouldn't want to sit down with my kid or my cousin or my whatever and do that. Astro's Playroom, really fun, but more of a, you know, it's family game because maybe you don't have a multiplayer game, you know, it's like anything's a family game if you have a sibling next to you, but, yeah. And then Animal Crossing, I think is maybe the second, I'd say Animal Crossing might win because, you know, you can share popularity. An island and like, you know, all that stuff. But I think Sackboy is the best for just, you know, you're dropping in. It has easy drop in, drop out. You can do online like it, you know, and it's simple as well. You can also pick people up. Like, I think that's the most family friendly game. But this category is always weird in every award show. I've never looked at it and not been like, why is this on here?
Janet, you know, what's a great family game? A game called It Takes Two. This brings us to story number two. It Takes Two reviews are up. I got a review roundup for y'all. Right now, or as of the time I put this thing together, it was sitting at a 90 on Metacritic and an 87 on OpenCritic. I'm going to start off with Sam Loveridge who at GamesRadar, who gave it 5 stars, a perfect score, and says, It Takes Two is a unique experience that makes the most of what it means to offer truly cooperative gameplay. Your relationship with whoever you're playing with is just as important as that of May and Cody, as you'll get nowhere without robust communication and teamwork. But its blend of reality and fantasy is also refreshingly different, especially within a framework that offers the kind of unique gameplay that never stops surprising. Mike Minotti over at GamesBeat also gave it 5 stars, a perfect score, and says, It Takes Two isn't just a series of fun co-op moments. It's some of the most fun I've ever had with a two-player game. It's also a pretty game, with the lighting standing out as especially impressive. On PlayStation 5, it's a smooth 60fps experience. I struggle to think of another co-op puzzler game that's better. Maybe Portal 2? Even if that's true, It Takes Two belongs on that same tier. Find yourself a friend or an emotionally distant spouse and spend a little time with It Takes Two. It'll be some of the most fun you'll have this year. Last, I'm going to pull from Andrew Reiner at Game Informer, who gave it a 9.25 out of 10 and says, It Takes Two may not be the platforming juggernaut that it aspires to be, but it more than makes up for that with its big heart, wealth and variety, and gorgeous imagery. All of its individual actions are things we've done in other games, but when applied to this distinct cooperative approach, they take on a whole new life and are used in wonderful ways over a long adventure. The action will have you laughing and screaming at your TV, and the story stays strong throughout, creating the backbone for an entertaining adventure that roars with excitement should keep you glued to the controller to see if this couple's lost love can be rekindled. Janet, do you have any interest in playing It Takes Two?
Oh, I'm so excited to play it. I'm playing it this Friday with my brother, which I guess is like kind of weird because they're like a couple or a divorced couple, but whatever, like that is what it is. And yeah, I'm so excited. I played A Way Out. I loved it. I was one of the people that was like more on that like hard 8 range for that game. I think the scores kind of fluctuate between like 7 and 8. I do think that one was a little bit, from what I've seen on this one seems more mechanically polished. Like for me, A Way Out was an awesome game because it had like so many lovely moments of what co-op, what makes co-op fun, which is that you're working together, but you're also sort of competing in some ways. And I love that A Way Out like really brought that out through its mini games. And without getting into spoilers, I think the story is really interesting. I had I remember working on Breaking Out of the Prison and then being like, we're out, you know, like what's next? But it actually really just picks up even more from there and gets even better once you get out. I don't think that's a spoiler that you get out of the prison. It is the entire premise of the game. So hearing that, like, this one's even better is really exciting. As well as, like, people tend to say that Hazelight/Ferris, like, it has been getting better over time in terms of games. So as someone that already liked A Way Out, I'm like, yes, I was all in on this as soon as I saw it. Hazelight is becoming one of those studios where when I see their name, when I see they're working on a project, I'm just already there, you know? And like, hey, it may or may not work out, but I'm ready to go because I've liked their work previously. So yeah, I'm super excited to play this. And I love that it is like, it's basically has like either is a platformer or has a lot of platforming elements, which I love platformers. So yeah, it seems awesome. You already played it. So what'd you think?
I loved it. We did a whole Gamescast review on it that went up this morning. And one of the fun things about doing reviews for stuff pre-embargo is that you have no idea what other people feel about the game. And I hadn't talked to Tim or Greg about their feelings on the game. And so when we went into the Gamescast, I was the one person that had finished it. And so I was pretty much the one giving the final review on it. And it was one of those things where I started talking about it. I think I started off my first sentence on it was, this is some of the most fun I've had with the game in years. And saying that, I was like, man, I really hope other people feel similarly, because I'm going to sound like such a crazy person when I go off about how much I fucking love this game. Like, I liked A Way Out, similar to you. I would probably put it in that 8 range. I had a lot of fun with it. I thought what they did with the characters and story was really fun. I thought what they did with gameplay was really fun. But yeah, it was one of those games that A Way Out was one of those games where coming out of it, I was like, this is great. They have found a fun niche. It's not the greatest thing since sliced bread, but it's a game that I had fun with, and I look forward to playing more games like it. It Takes Two is the game for me from Hazelight that has made me a fan. I'm going to play whatever game they put out next. I'm going to continue to follow their games, because It Takes Two lives up to the expectation and exceeds it by far. There are obviously things here and there, like there are certain story choices that are like, all right, maybe you could have quickened this up and like made certain story arcs go faster or introduced certain things earlier or done certain things with certain characters. Like, I have those complaints here and there, but overall, as a gameplay experience, I was blown away. It for what it does with co-op, you know, it obviously does the A Way Out thing where it's split screen. You and your co-op partner are solving puzzles or doing things to help each other out throughout along the way. But it totally refines that process and makes it so that they are constantly introducing new mechanics, and every level they introduce something brand new that is the overarching mechanic for that level. And the way in which they play around with those mechanics and change things up and keep things fresh and keep things fun is awesome. The way in which they give players moments to breathe and have fun, right? Like there will be times where me and my co-op partner will get through this long set of set piece moments because we're being chased by a fucking squirrel or some shit because we're playing as dolls trying to get back to normalcy or whatever. We're being chased by squirrels. Cool. We just got done with this huge set piece. Now we're in this open environment that we can explore and have fun with and fuck around with different things. Like, that stuff comes together super well. And then within all of that, they also have tons of mini games and fun PvP stuff that you can do along the way.
I'm so excited.
It's filled with fun moments, it's filled with fun distractions, it's filled with a lot of heart. And like Andrew, I think it was Andrew in his review, right, who said this, it's filled with gorgeous visuals. You know, the game looks excellent. Actually, no, it was Mike Benatti that said this, right? It's a smooth 60 FPS on PS5 with great lighting, great textures. It has kind of a, I don't want to compare it to Pixar because I think that puts it on another level in terms of expectation, but it has that fun magical quality when you're talking about animation and what you want from that type of family story that is also trying to scale to be
appealing
to
adults. Could this be family game of the year?
I mean, the thing. Yes, but also no.
Tie it all together.
Because in there are like a few scenes where they very much lean off of the this is a kids game and go very hard for adult. There is like one scene in particular that Greg was talking about on the Gamescast that like is very fucked up and very like a very much a wow, I can't believe this is happening right now sort of scene that is definitely not a kid appropriate thing. And there are also like weird moments of them going hard in terms of like cuss words and all that stuff where like in ways where I was like, you guys could have gone for an E10 plus rating if you changed these two scenes, but because of these scenes you guys are probably rated T, which I think is hilarious. Like, I don't have a problem with it, but I just found it to be such a peculiar thing for a game that very easily could have gone for the family game of the year sort of thing, which it might. So still, who knows?
Do you think, you know, a lot of people like in this review roundup mentioned like how it stacks up against other co-op games. And oddly enough, not listed here, but I had looked at some of the review at The Gamer that Kirk did, and he had couched it in the same way that, I think it was Mike? Yeah, with the Portal 2 comparison. Like, he had that, which I think is funny. You know, you had mentioned, like, this is very inside baseball for, like, those listening, but, like, when you're in media and doing stuff embargoed, yeah, you do have that, like, kind of, like, anxiety of, like, okay, am I going to be, like, on the high end, the low end? Like, and, you know, that's why you just have to trust, like, your own opinion, you know, and just go for it. And, like, if you seem like an outlier, it is what it is. But it's nice to, like, know what other people think. But it's also funny because when you, like, start to really get into criticism, you'll, like, read other people's work after the fact, and it's a lot of the same language. And it's like, whoa, we have the same thought. And I think that's just, you know, that just speaks to honing that craft of criticism. But bring it back to that Portal 2 comparison. Is this the best co-op experience you've had? And
yes,
if not, or easily. If you're not sure, oh, damn, just yes.
Yeah.
Wow.
Just yes, okay. Yeah. I mean, yeah, like there's not been, and here's
so
the thing.
Here's the caveat.
I've not played Portal 2 co-op. I played Portal 2 single player all the way through and loved it. But at the time, I didn't have somebody to play co-op with. And playing this game made me and my co-op partner go, yo, let's fucking play Portal 2 after this. Because we want more of this. We want to play more co-op games like this. And Portal 2 was the one that came to mind. And also Brothers, A Tale of Two Sons, which is another Haze-like game. Neither of us had played it. And so we're like, okay, cool. That's on the agenda now. Now we're playing Portal 2 and Brothers, A Tale of Two Sons to play after this. But as of now, yeah, this is easily the best co-op game I've ever played. It's not even close.
Wow.
It's not even close.
Well,
it's ridiculous.
There's not that many. There's not that many. But still, that's
also
pretty...
the thing. There's not that many.
The fact that, like, you and so many other reviewers are saying that so confidently is pretty cool. And I'm excited about this because we all have our own little, like, things in games that really click for us. And one of mine is being a character in a really big world, and this has that. So I'm like, yep. Yes. Like, whatever that.
Oh,
I'm
you're
like,
going to love this game.
Little nightmare. I'm like, I want to be little. I want to be small. As I'm small in real life, I want to be small. And then I want everything to be giant. And it's like cool and it's crazy. Cause what I like about that is it adds, you know, excitement to the mundane. It just changed, you know, a normal room is suddenly like really exciting because you're looking at it from this different perspective and opens up all these cool gameplay moments. So all right,
when
well,
I tell you,
I'll
you're going to love this game. You're going to absolutely love this game.
So what's your game of the year right now? Is this
yeah.
it?
It's wow. It Takes Two is it. And again, I
again,
expect it to be deep.
Crazy year yet. Not that crazy of a year yet, but
yeah, like I mean, the other game for me would have been Hitman 3. You know, like mm-hmm. those are obviously these are the two games that I love the most this year so far. But
also,
I expect another game to come through and probably
who had this like critic fantasy draft or whatever the hell you all call it. Who had this game?
Not me. I think it was Greg.
Damn.
I'm typing it in right now. I'm pretty sure Greg was the one that got this game because I stayed away from it knowing that A Way Out kind of had mixed-ish reviews, like good reviews, but not amazing. And I was trying to stick to stuff that I thought was very safe, and It Takes Two wasn't safe for me. Greg was the one that got It Takes Two. So Greg is going to score big points on this because right now, 90 on Metacritic. I think it might be, it's a little bit lower on OpenCritic, 87, but still very good score for that fantasy draft. So congratulations, Greg Miller, on that one. Let's talk about story number three. An ex-Ghostwire Tokyo director, Ikumi Nakamura, opens a studio. This is from Jordan Olerman over at IGN. Fan favorite ex-Bethesda director Ikumi Nakamura has announced that she is opening her own indie studio and is developing a new game. A short documentary from GameSpark and Archipel, which is available on YouTube, follows Nakamura as she tours abandoned buildings in Japan. Nakamura revealed that she left Evil Within developer Tango Gameworks due to health troubles. Quote, "I started wondering whether there wasn't a way for me to make games while feeling better," she says. She continues, quote, "I took the decision to quit before it was too late." After leaving, Nakamura received over 2,000 messages on LinkedIn offering studio visits and support. She used these opportunities to understand, quote, "what made a good working environment," end quote. Quote, I decided to use that experience to open my own small studio and build my IP, Nakamura says. Later in the documentary, Nakamura adds that she wants to build a diverse team, noting that after her E3 presentation, and to remind people, right, like this is a couple years ago where during the Bethesda E3, she was the one that came out to present Ghostwire Tokyo, and she was the one with the quirky, fun personality, and everybody loved her, and she was amazing. After her E3 presentation, 80% of the messages she received were from women, quote, happy to see a female game director or game creator getting on stage and showing her game. Nakamura rounds off the documentary by adding that she wants to make a game full of dark jokes and compares herself to Deadpool. In June 2020, Nakamura told IGN Japan that she has plans to pitch a new Okami game to Capcom after teasing a potential collaboration with Platinum Games' Hideki Kamiya in October of 2019. And fast forward now, obviously, a new Okami doesn't sound like it'd be full of dark jokes, and so I'd assume that that's not what she's working on now, but that's a fun tidbit for you. Janet, do you have any thoughts on this one?
New is always better, so hell yeah. Open that studio. Do your thing. I've lately been just getting really excited about seeing different developers just go and have like whatever career move they see fit. I mean, at the end of the day, I think it's important that us as game fans and game critics at the end of the day default to supporting developers who make the games that we love or hate or whatever, but they fuel our career and like what I get excited to do every day. So if this is the right move for her, like I love that she is so transparent too with all of it, where it's like, hey, I had to step back because I couldn't do this and be okay. And like, I love that she mentions too that I took the decision before it was too late, because so often when you do see people burn out or quit or whatever personal things come up that cause them to kind of leave the industry, like it's not on their own terms, or it's, you know, we've all been that person that like you took the day off, but you really needed the day off like 3 days ago and you're like fried. So I love that she was proactive in this. I love that she mentions the representation part and like the going to other studios and trying to find like what makes for good work practices. This reminds me a lot of, oh my gosh, now I'm blanking on the name, Jade Raymond, her studio that got announced last week at Haven. And she mentions like it being a haven for developers or for creators. So I, you know, especially as someone that is now independent as well, like I really get jazzed about people pursuing like the best way to thrive within capitalistic society and just being like, you know what, I'm going to make this and like, it's going to be different and it's going to have like, I'm going to try to avoid the pitfalls that I've seen at previous studios or try to just create an environment where people can thrive and feel creative and do their thing. And again, I love that she notes the diversity element as someone who's a woman in games. I also was really excited. You don't see women on stage a lot. When I jump onto shows, I'm often not talking to another woman, you know, no offense, blessing, but like, it's just it's the case, you know, you're often the lone person there. So like, mm-hmm. I love that she mentions that as an important ethos. And, you know, in a way it sucks that so often when you're a marginalized creator in a space, you have to be the one that like leads the way of change. Like, oh, it'd be nice if someone in power did that, you know, or had more social status, but it's like, I'm going to do this and I'm going to, you know, be this change. And I'm this like beacon for like women in the industry. And like, yeah, I love everything about it. Obviously I don't know her personally. I've never spoken to her. She doesn't know who I am, but I get like a really good vibe. And I love that she is talking about things like diversity, work ethic, health, as part of game development. Like, I think the being able to be a creator who comes out and talks about that stuff and carves their own path is so important. So often we're seeing studios who have good work practices really talk about that as part of their process. So yeah, I love everything about this. This is awesome.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. And I think this, especially coming off of the Jade Raymond news that she's partnering with PlayStation and she's opening up Haven Studio, I think it is to exactly what you're saying. It's awesome to see two women lead lead two studios in this way and start from the ground up and be able to define what their studios are going to be and blaze that trail. And so this is cool. It's nice. I agree with you too that new is always welcome. You know, her being able to open up her own independent studio and basically set the tone of being like, I want to make a game full of dark jokes, you know, and I'm gonna own this and I want this to be something that's my own. I think that's also very exciting and very cool.
I love the Deadpool comparison. It's so random.
Yeah, I love the Deadpool comparison too. So I look forward to see what we get out of that. Janet, before we get to story number four, I want to tell you about our sponsor. Of course, you can go to patreon.com/kindoffunnygames where you can get the show ad free. And speaking of ads, this episode of Kind of Funny Games Daily is brought to you by DoorDash. Did you forget that one thing at the store? Now you can get snacks, drinks, and household essentials in 30 minutes with DoorDash. DoorDash connects you with restaurants you love right now and right to your door. And now you can get the grocery essentials you need from DoorDash too. Get drinks, snacks, and other household items delivered in under an hour. Ordering is easy. Open the DoorDash app, choose what you want from where you want, and your items will be left safely outside your door with the contactless delivery drop-off setting. With over 300,000 partners in the U.S., Puerto Rico, Australia, and now Canada, you can support your neighborhood go-tos or choose from your favorite national restaurants like Popeyes, Chipotle, and Cheesecake Factory. For a limited time, our listeners can get 25% off and zero delivery fees on their first order of $15 or more when you download the DoorDash app and enter code GAMES2021. For our Canadian listeners, use code GAMESCA. That's 25% off, up to $10 in value, and zero delivery fees on your first order when you download the DoorDash app in the App Store and enter code GAMES2021 in the U.S. and GAMESCA in Canada. Don't forget, that's code GAMES2021 or GAMESCA for 25% off your first order with DoorDash. Subject to change, terms apply. We're also brought to you by Gabby. We're all looking for ways to save money, right? Especially now. So let me ask you this. How would you like to keep an extra $961 a year in your pocket? That's how much Gabby customers save per year on average on car and home insurance. That's why when shopping for insurance, you should use Gabby. This is the time of the year we go shopping for insurance. Well, Gabby takes the pain out of shopping for insurance by giving you an apples-to-apples comparison of your current coverage with 40 of the top insurance providers like Progressive, Nationwide, and Travelers. Just link your current insurance account, and in just minutes, you'll be able to see quotes for the exact same coverage you currently have. Gabby customers save $961 per year on average. I bet that'd be nice to have in your pocket every year. If they can't find you savings like they did for Tim Gettys, they'll let you know so that you can relax knowing you have the best rate out there. And they'll never sell your info, so no annoying spam or robocalls. You're probably overpaying on car and home insurance. See how much Gabby can save you. It's totally free to check out, and there's no obligation. Go to Gabby.com/GamesDaily. That is GABI.com/GamesDaily. Gabby.com/GamesDaily. Last but not least, we're brought to you by Game Attack. If you best friends didn't know, our friends at Game Attack are trying the impossible. Become the most sub 2 streamers on all of Twitch, if not for just a month. Hashtag March to the Top is their attempt to prove to the world that a quality audience is just as incredible as a gigantic audience. So far, Game Attack, with only 30,000 followers, has more subs than Dr. Lupo, Lyric, Pokimane, and Mizkif, sitting in the top 17 sub 2 channels on all of Twitch. Today, they are creating their own G Fuel flavor. Then later, Sean will be eating every item on the Taco Bell menu. And tonight, that sounds dangerous. Sean Boland, get some help. And tonight, a collab with John Reisinger. John and Grayson will be going head-to-head in God of War 2018, which I'm also curious about that, because that is not a multiplayer game. So I want to know what the rules to that are. Is it a speedrun? Probably. Make sure to say Kinda Funny sent me to be worshipped like a god. G1s love to see the best friends in their chat. Remember, that's going down on twitch.tv/gameattack. Very fun stuff. That's really cool. I really do want to know what that God of War thing is about, because that sounds like a fun time if they're able to figure out rules.
Best co-op experience I've ever had. God of War.
God of War 2018.
Taking out as many Valkyries as possible.
Oh, you know? Is that it? Are they like?
No.
Is that
I'm
like
just,
a,
now? I'm guessing.
That's just honestly, that would be a great way to do it. Who can take out all the Valkyries faster, or do like a Valkyrie speed run first to five?
Like, some of us can't get any Valkyries, so like one would be an achievement for some of us.
Yeah, that sounds really fun.
They were so hard.
They were so difficult.
You know what I mean? Like
story
really
number four.
Me.
Do you know what's more difficult than taking out Valkyries?
What?
Keeping Mario from dying on March 31st, 2021. Story number four, Nintendo confirms download codes for Super Mario 3D All-Stars will work after March 31st. This is Adam Bankhurst at IGN. Despite Nintendo's plan to remove Super Mario 3D All-Stars from Nintendo Switch's eShop and to cease production of physical copies on March 31st, the company has confirmed that retail download codes will still be valid past that date. As reported by VGC, Nintendo's Japan HQ confirmed that these codes will be redeemable after April, and it would be safe to assume that this would be the same for Western markets as well. It's a small bit of good news for those who have yet to purchase Super Mario 3D All-Stars, but those interested shouldn't waste time picking up the game if they wish to as March 31st, if they wish to you, as March 31st is only 7 days away. Janet Garcia, Mario is dying in about a week. Are you sad about it?
You know, I think grief hits us all in different ways. I don't know if I fully processed what is going to happen to Mario. I do know that at least two people sent me, if y'all have not seen it, that fake direct ad that says like come to Mario's demise or something, like happening March 31st. It's really good. I'll try to find it and send it to you. But yeah, this is a, you know, this is weird. And I think it's one of those things too, like where a lot of people who aren't as in the know as we are, you know, like you and I, and even the people watching, like if you're someone who's like constantly is consuming game news, like that's already a really intense like tier of gaming to be at. So like for normal people who are just like, I just play, you know, I'm just hanging out and I walk into the Target, it's like I really worry that they're gonna, you know, find out about this game and be like, I don't understand, and then explaining it, I just feel dumb. Like you ever have almost like secondhand embarrassment where it's like, now I have to tell you about this dumb stuff, and like then you're gonna be like, that doesn't make any sense, and I have to be like, yeah, I know, right? And it's just like you're where I already have been for like the last year. Yeah, this is still such an odd decision. I think deep down a lot of us hope that maybe Nintendo would change their mind, but at the same time, like, I think wouldn't that be more of a jerk move to like fake out that you're gonna pull it and then not pull it? So it's just such an odd situation, and I really, really hope that this doesn't become a trend for Nintendo. I don't really understand why this occurred. I guess the answer is what it is to everything, which is capitalism. But like, why? Like, I haven't seen this be a thing. Like, is this going to be a thing now? Like,
I mean, to the capitalism point, right? I think the idea is, hey, let's boost up sales for the fiscal quarter, and so tell people that they can't get this thing after March 31st, so that they show up and boost our sales for this quarter, so we can have good reports. And then maybe down the line, I still expect them to maybe piecemeal it where they end up selling Mario Sunshine, Mario 64, and Mario Galaxy separately on the store maybe like a year from now. Maybe that's when they introduce Galaxy 2. I think
if they do, yes, if they do that, I would like to see Galaxy 2 appear. That would be nice. But yeah, it's also like, this is kind of a weird fact. I mean, it's good to like always confirm details like this because you want to know all the information you can. So I think this reporting is definitely important. But it's like, who is that person that's like, I'm gonna wait until like I'm in the know enough to like know this, but not to just buy it already? Like, I don't know, maybe you get paid on the 31st and you're gonna buy it like April 1st or something. Like, maybe that's your situation. But yeah, if you have the codes, you can, you know, redeem them. Like, if you are buying a digital code first and then you're gonna put it in later, or if you like, I remember someone asking me about this and being like, oh, are they gonna just like pull them off from the store? I'm like, what's gonna like hide them in the back and just throw them in the dumpster? But like, once they sell out, you know, like a Target, a GameStop, etc., there's not going to be more coming in. So exactly. But I did like the idea of people having this catastrophic, almost like a snap, but of these Mario cartridges just all
like
disappearing.
A fan will snap it away, they just fucking disintegrate into thin air, and I was like, yeah. Oh, please, Mr. Stark,
if
please,
you actually don't, if you don't have the game in your Switch at Mr. the time, Miyamoto, it just stops working.
God, could you imagine? We're just playing our Switches, and then March 31st, you just see dust evaporate from your Switch, and it's like, what the fuck? And then the Mario game just freezes, stops working.
You had time to beat it, and you didn't, because you'd know you barely played them, because I barely played them.
You messed up. You should have beat Mario by now. I really hope that they do find a way to make these available again, because yeah, this is such a bummer. And the thing that I think is even more of a bummer is that Mario 35 is just going to be unplayable. You know, they're going to shut down those servers, and I think that's fucked up. I don't like it. I don't like it at all. Stop taking away games. Our last news story for the day is a quick one. We've got details on Hitman 3's next DLC. This is story number 5 from Matt Perslow at IGN. IO Interactive has announced Seven Deadly Sins, a multi-part paid-for expansion for Hitman 3. As the title implies, Seven Deadly Sins will be made up of 7 new content packs that are themed around the capital vices of greed, lust, gluttony, sloth, wrath, envy, and pride. Each one will include a visually distinct contract, sin-themed unlockable suit. I love a sin-themed unlockable suit. That sounds really cool. And at least one sin-themed object that can be used both in the new contract and across all missions in the Hitman trilogy. Delivered episodically, Seven Deadly Sins will start with Act 1, Greed, which launches on March 30th. This pack features a new escalation called the Greed Enumeration. Set in Dubai, its new notable feature is that it will allow players to carry certain special items over from stage to stage of the escalation. Additionally, players will be able to unlock the golden rapacious suit and make use of the greedy little coin and devil's cane items. Pricing has not yet been announced, but when Seven Deadly Sins launches, players will have two options: to buy a new to buy each new season of Sins as it arrives, or buy all seven parts as of a season pass for a discounted price. This is pretty cool. We had conversations on KFGD earlier when Hitman 3 was first releasing about what does DLC look like for this game. They talked about how they're not releasing new maps, and I think this is a cool idea to have it be like this series of themed escalations, themed all around Sin, which I think the Seven Deadly Sins, which I think is a fun idea. Very, very weird and different for Hitman, but I'm down for it. You know,
what do you think these like Sin suits are gonna look like?
Oh man, it's
like, are we gonna finally get like this Hitman dude in like the maid costume? Like, is this finally gonna?
I do like shit, having a suit for each of the Seven Deadly Sins. So Lust is
like the Lust one has to be like saucy.
Agent 47
like,
in the booty outfit.
Yes.
Booty shorts.
Assless chaps.
No shirt. Assless chaps. I like it. Gluttony.
Like a what's the thing they call it? Like
a bib.
It's not a bib, but it's like a. You put like a it could be like a bib. Maybe like a food covered thing. Mm-hmm. Maybe his pockets will be full of candy.
Fingers. Cheeto,
oh, that'd be great.
Everything.
As Agent 47, you can just like place candy on the ground to lead your target away.
Bugles on your fingers. Now you have witch hands. You know.
Mm-hmm. I like the idea of there being a sloth outfit that just makes you slower. That's the whole thing.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. It'd be like a onesie, like a comfy thing.
Oh yeah.
Reed, a suit made of money.
Sumo suit says Schnwick for Gluttony. I can see it too.
Anyway, go get him for Gluttony as well is in there. Yeah, that makes sense. That makes more sense than bib. Apron.
Janet,
thank you.
I'm very excited to see what these seven suits look like, but the release of Hitman Seven Deadly Sins is just so far away. If I want to know what's coming out to Mom and Drop shops today, where would I look?
The official list of upcoming software across each and every platform as listed by the Kind of Funny Games Daily show hosts each and every weekday.
Out today, speaking of Hitman and Lust, Rip Them Off is out today on Xbox One. I want to know what that's about. Oh, you know what? It probably means Rip Them Off as in like money, not Rip Them Off as in Agent 47's clothing. Paradise Lost is also out, PS4, Xbox One, and PC. Tales from Borderlands is out on Switch. Love Live, School Idol Festival, After School Activity, YY Home Meeting is out today on PS4. What a name. Hell Breachers is out today on Switch. Golf Royale is out today on Switch. Tesla Force is out on Steam. And Kazakh Jack is out today on Steam. New dates for you. Violin is coming to Steam on April 22nd. Kung Fu Kickball Early Access launches April 13th. Night Squad 2 comes to Switch, Xbox, PC in April on April 14th. And then Totally Reliable Delivery Service is coming to Steam on April 1st. Janet, of course, folks can write into patreon.com/kindoffunnygames where they can get the show ad-free, but they can also write in with their questions and their squad-ups. I got a question here from Jordan Rowan, who writes in and says, should Microsoft possibly buying Discord worry Sony at all? Also, with Sony and Microsoft trading blows, are you worried about them buying up too much? Thank you and love you. Love you too, Jordan Rowan. Janet, are you worried at all about Microsoft buying Discord, both from the sense of Sony losing out on that potential partnership and also from just Microsoft buying all these different studios and acquisitions?
No, Microsoft really needs to like get it together. So I'm here for anything that could be construed as good news for Microsoft. And I say that as someone that has both the consoles, like I don't, you know, believe in the console wars as a thing. Like I had a sibling and they just got the other one. And we combined our powers. That's why I didn't have an Xbox for a long time, because I didn't have a third sibling. If I had a third sibling, I would have been on Microsoft a lot earlier, but I didn't. So I only had Nintendo and PlayStation. But all that being said, I think also Microsoft, this acquisition seems to play to their strengths. They are all about like creating streamlined services for gamers is sort of like been their bag as of late. Obviously, they are trying to like beef up the exclusive stuff, but until they can really do that, I think what they're trying to really use to distinguish themselves is like services and ease of use, right? I mean, their whole thing with smart delivery leans into that. The whole thing with like the UI not changing leans into that. It's like, hey, are you, it's kind of like why I have an iPhone, right? It's like, I don't want to think about, no thoughts, just iPhone, you know, no thoughts, just Apple. I'm not going to look for the best phone. I'm just going with this. I think Microsoft's leaning into that. So like, you know, that's why it just sort of puts your new box, that's it. And I think like Discord is so often used by gamers for like a variety of things, from like connecting to just voice chat. So yeah, I mean, I think this makes sense. Am I worried they'll all buy everything? Not more worried than I already am for every other monopoly, not monopoly, that exists in this world. I mean, so many things are owned by just one thing. Like, it sort of just is the way of the world. So I don't really have concerns in that sense. And I will say that I haven't like been in Discord long enough to really speak to potential specific concerns that I have for the Microsoft acquisition. Like every acquisition, I think we won't know if this is good or bad for like Discord or for like gamers until we see what changes are perceivable to us from the outside in.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, in terms of the Microsoft Discord acquisition, right? Like the reports have been that they've just been in talks, right? Which I think, you know, could lead to something down the road. But I, as of this point, I'm not like, you know, I'm not writing it off that Discord is going to get bought by Microsoft yet. But to the idea of it, to the idea that Microsoft is in talks to buy, to continue to acquire and do all these different things, I do get nervous with the idea of everything getting consolidated in an industry, like Microsoft being the owners of all these different apps and all these different, like, obviously Microsoft already does own a bunch of different shit, right? Because they're Microsoft, they fucking run the world. But the continual consolidation of the games industry specifically, I think, can be worrying for the idea of that then puts things into fewer umbrellas, meaning that there's less diversity in ideas and less different types of products being put out there, and I think that eventually causes stagnation in terms of, if everything is a Microsoft, if every studio is a Microsoft studio, then what does that do for the industry? What do you then expect to see in terms of new products, new ideas? All, what does that do for competition? All this shit. Should PlayStation be worried about Microsoft buying Discord? I mean, I don't think PlayStation was going to do anything with Discord anyway. You know, that's not really been the way that PlayStation has been rolling. And even with that, I think, I don't know. Like, I Discord for Microsoft would be more, I think, would be more than Xbox. I think Discord for Microsoft would feed in more so toward the broad business of Microsoft, in the way that they could use a better voice chat solution, because Microsoft has Skype, Microsoft has things, but Discord as a technology can probably prove of worth to them from more of a Microsoft enterprise thing, more so than a, hey, how do we improve Xbox thing? I think it worked both ways, but I do think that there's a bigger idea there that's at play that goes beyond just them trying to keep up competition with Sony. So that's where I stand with it. Now it's time to squad up. Of course, you can write into patreon.com/kindoffunnygames to write in with your squad ups, just like Snoochie Coochie did. Snoochie Coochie writes in with a squad up and says, come join the Blue Milk Mommies in Star Wars The Old Republic and start your own Star Wars legend with the likes of Taylor Sith, Bicycle Micycle, and Kinda Funny Kevin. Also, Greg, you need to log on and promote some officers, because nobody can join the guild. If you want to join, Snoochie Coochie wrote in, and they didn't say whether this is their username or the name of the guild or whatever this is.
Snoochie Coochie's is their username. The guild is the Blue Milk Mommies.
So the guild is the Blue Milk Mommies. Mm-hmm. Well, I think that then makes, because they wrote in with Shoney's Chonies, which I assume is their fucking username. So Snoochie Coochie is their alias for writing in. Shoney's Chonies, if you want to play with them on Star Wars, is their gamer tag. And then the Blue Milk Mommies is the clan, if you want to come through, play some Star Wars Old Republic, and have some fun.
I have so
many
feelings after the last 30 seconds.
I've said a lot of things that I didn't want to say on a live podcast.
Their gamer tag. It doesn't matter.
Then what's Shoney's Chonies?
I don't know, man. I don't know what Shoney's Chonies are.
Either way, I don't like it. I don't like it.
Sword has been a lot of fun.
Oh, really? Have you been enjoying it, Kevin?
Yeah, having a blast.
What do you know what the clan features are? Like, what do people get when they join the Blue Milk Mommies? Is it more XP when you play with each other?
I think we can then go and do things together, and everyone gets. Oh, Mike was just pronouncing his name, Snoochie Coochies. We were remiss reading the name. God, we're
gotcha.
Terrible.
So his actual username is Shoney's Chonies, but Mike was misreading it as Snoochie's Coochies, which is.
But
the
his name was Shane? Sean.
Sean. No, his first name
is
Shoney's
Chonies. Yes.
Now it's time for kindoffunny.com/you're wrong, where you write a list of what we got wrong as we got it wrong. So you can correct it later for those listening on podcast services around the globe and watching on youtube.com/kindoffunnygames. You're wrong is doing a weird thing where I am seeing your wrongs from a week ago, but we usually delete those, and so I don't know how that's happening. But going through. Big Bad Beluga says the sandwich chain Subway used to serve customizable pizzas at select stores as well.
Damn.
Another food
is
item
pizza
they
a hot
were
dog?
Out of,
Wait, no,
they're out of their space with. Didn't McDonald's have a limited pizza thing one day?
Like in the 90s or something.
Everything happened in the 90s.
But being sold at Subway doesn't make it a sandwich, is I think what the argument
Correct.
Was being made.
Because they sell cookies, and cookies are not sandwiches.
But if we stick ham in them, would they be?
Let's yeah, it'd be here. Gross. But you could, if you make the, instead of the bread, if they're just cookies, kind of like, you can have an ice cream sandwich, right? And we all know what that looks like. That's sure. not really, God. You know, it doesn't have the properties of a normal sandwich, but it has the sentiment of a sandwich.
I love ice cream sandwiches so much. You ever have an It's It?
God, ice cream sandwiches are so fucking good.
Yeah, ice cream makes my teeth, like, cut hurt, like, the cold hurts good. Them. No. I still eat it though because
yeah, you
it's delicious.
You gotta fight through that.
I'm yeah, you just gotta like.
That's never once.
I'm
stopped.
Like, damn.
Never once.
I need to get this dental care together one day, but until
sure.
then,
I mean,
it's
that's
just
some
pain.
Adult shit. Like, you know, don't worry about it. That's adult shit. Don't worry, we'll get there.
We'll get there. That's it for kindoffunny.com/you're wrongs. There weren't really any actual you're wrongs. There is some breaking news stuff, but of course, we'll cover that tomorrow on Kind of Funny Games Daily.
Anything
but
crazy?
For now, nothing crazy. Nothing that
we'll
I could verify.
Tune in tomorrow to find out.
Yeah, like stay tuned tomorrow to find out how crazy the breaking news is. Tomorrow's hosts, if you want to tune in tomorrow, are going to be Tim and Timur Hussein from GameSpot. That's right, a Tim Thursday. If you're watching this live right now on Twitch, after this is Snowbike Mike playing some of that Fall Guys new season with who, Kevin? Sad Boy Barrett. That's right.
Oh, yeah?
Sad Boy Barrett.
Oh,
Courtney.
Yeah?
They're going to be having a good time.
I'm only assuming
because Sad Boy Barrett is in the other live Discord chat, and so
which,
that's all.
I mean, he's
going
to have
from.
To come in here to run the post show, so that's an interesting little thing.
Oh, he'll hop back and forth. We'll have a good time. Of course,
yeah,
this has been
Kind
of Funny Games Daily, each and every weekday.
I'm here.
Twitch.tv. Oh, he's here.
There it
are
is.
You playing Fall Guys?
Oh, yeah, I'm playing Fall. I was just hanging out with Mike just to get ready. You know?
What platform are you guys playing on?
Oh, we're PC. Playing PC. That's where all of the custom server stuff happens.
So we got custom server shows?
Oh, yeah.
I can play with you for like 30 minutes if you guys want a third person.
Oh, yeah. We're going to need lots of people.
Three's a crowd. No, I'm kidding. Get the fuck in here, Blaz.
Yeah.
Let's go.
Yeah, he was joking.
Oh, let's
he was
go.
Joking,
you
baby.
Trying to play some Fall
Get
Guys?
It.
What's up?
Janet, you trying to play some Fall Guys? Let's invite just everybody
not.
Can.
I could later, maybe. Okay. No, I didn't really like it very much. I know.
Honestly, it kind of sucks. I hate it, personally.
Oh, Kevin, don't even lie. Don't even lie.
Yeah, I mean, I'm really, really bad. Like, you think
you have a fun time? Though.
Nobody's good at Fall Guys
like
except for Stomach.
That's a lie. That's a lie. I've seen them. They exist, and they're
Stomach
the ones
Mike
getting
and
the
Grand
little...
Pooh Bear are the two that are good at Fall Guys. It's only them.
All right, let's go. Let's end this show.
Let's go. Let's end this. Of course, situation. This has been Kind of Funny Games Daily, each and every weekday live right here on twitch.tv/kindoffunnygames. We run you through the nerdy news you need to know about. We have a Patreon post show right after this for those that are subbed at the silver level of patreon.com/kindoffunnygames. So stick around for that. Otherwise, until next time, Game Daily.
Where can we find Janet? Did we do that?
Oh, Janet, where can we find you?
Hi, you can find me everywhere on the internet under the handle GameOnysus. That's Game Onysus. That's Patreon, Twitter, TikTok, Instagram, Facebook, YouTube, and just the website GameOnysus.com. So yeah,
go support GameOnysus. Patreon.com/GameOnysus. All that good stuff. Show her all the love. Until next time, it's been our pleasure to serve you.